are listening to Seniors Junction Podcast. We are eliminating seniors isolation one conversation at a time. Your hosts today, Dr. Namrata Bagaria, and myself, Dr. Paul Merkley, our special guest today, Dr. Munira Sultana, postdoctoral fellow at St. Joseph Hospital in London, Ontario, and she works at the Gait and Brain Lab. Welcome.
Thank you, Paul.
So please tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
I am a postdoctoral fellow in Gait and Brain Lab at Parkwood Institute. And my supervisor is Dr. Manuel Montero Odesso. I got my PhD in health science from Western University. And my PhD thesis involved reduction of responsive behaviors, which basically means depression, agitation, aggression, apathy, in dementia with virtual reality experience. I also am a physician from Dhaka University, Bangladesh, with a master's in public health from Sydney University, Australia. And I spent 8 years in clinical and academic research on cognitive health in Canada, and 5 years in community health research in various parts of the world like Bangladesh, India, Nepal, and Kenya. My research interests are cognitive health, person-centered care, and health innovation. I'm curious to learn how biological mechanisms play a role in dementia progression. Right now, I'm working to characterize those individuals at a higher risk of dementia based on their metabolomics profile, which is basically some tiny particles in our bloodstream, slowing of gait and decline in cognition.
Wow. That's all I can say. That's a very talented lady we have on the podcast, and such an honor to meet someone who's worked hard and very hard to break the barriers culturally and professionally. So that's awesome. And my question to you is, Munira, you've worked across different geographies, very globally oriented, community and clinical. I'm sure you must have come across isolation, especially in older adults. And what is your take on it? What do you see as the pain points? Can you tell us more?
Let me go back to my recent experience when I was doing my PhD project in a London, Ontario nursing home. My research involved, again, reducing responsive behaviors in dementia. When someone starts residing in nursing home, that person has to give up his or her social circles, hobbies, recreational activities, like partying with friends or family, going to a movie theater, or simply driving around. That person has to create a new social circle from scratch. And this isolation from familiar surroundings sometimes contributes to responsive behavior, especially in people with dementia, as their cognitive decline worsens the situation. When we introduced virtual reality experience, that was the intervention for my PhD project, it was customized to their preferences. We could see a visible change in their behaviors. They were calmer, more compliant, and friendlier than usual. You see, what I'm trying to say is that our social surroundings are important. And that is my observation. And it affects how we behave, how we perceive our environment. And ultimately, it affects our mental health.
Beautiful. In fact, just today, I was sharing with Paul some research from Finland and how they approach community housing, where you can come together, intergenerational or older adults. And there is no, it's not like a nursing home, but everybody has a chore to do. Like, it's like a co-op housing, but with actual tasks of cooking and sharing a meal and mowing the lawn and stuff like that, which is very interesting. It's a little different. And the many parts of the world where community living is like probably commoner, and some parts it's not so common. So what you're saying, the environment is a big enabler or a non-enabler, which is true. And I think what you're saying is spot on, because even in like my own experience, when my father was sick and towards the end of his life, when we had to shift him in the hospitals, when he was in the familiar place with the familiar doctors and familiar hospital, he was very calm, but he was very agitated when he was in a new place. You know, so that does make a difference in health outcomes, not just social settings, but it like not just that, just that orientation, it makes a difference. And unfortunately, we don't address it in clinical scenarios.
Absolutely, absolutely. Like our body is, we have to think our health as a whole. It's not just a part of our body, it's our mind, it's how we think and how we see the spaces around us, people around us. Everything is connected. You're absolutely right.
As you customize the virtual reality experiences or personalize them, did you do it with a view to choosing things that were familiar to the subjects?
Actually, yes. Before we introduced our intervention to our participants, we talked to the family members of those participants, and they told us a little bit about their background, how they grew up, what things they like. For example, we had a gentleman, he loved Harley-Davidson, he used to drive Harley-Davidson. So we created this virtual reality experience, 20 minutes of duration, with feeling like he's driving a motorcycle on the road. So the scenario is moving and it feels like he is in the bike. And he loved it. He didn't miss a single session for that. But there were instances that ticked many memories back that was not desired, because I have to tell you all the good and bad things. Like family members told us about a person that she used to grow up in the area of Bavarian Alps. So we created this scenery of Bavarian Alps. But she was upset seeing that. She grew up there, but she didn't like that scenery. So later on, her family found out that when she was young, that was the time of World War II. And she had some bad memories with that place. So we changed that. So being customized was a big component of our intervention.
Thank you. So you've already answered a great deal of this next question, but is there anything you would add about your vision for addressing seniors' isolation and the risks of isolation?
Well, realistically, I do understand that we cannot hold on to our familiar surroundings, our friends, our family forever. Time changes everything. But we can keep our fond memories alive. Technological advances offered us that opportunity. We can walk around our neighborhood just the way we remembered, virtually. We can talk to our loved ones face to face, no matter how far they are, using video chat like we are doing right now. Yeah. And we should think out of the box to solve these issues. Like there are lots of possibilities. We have to make use of them. That's my vision. Mm-hmm.
And I think piggybacking on this, and Paul, we've discussed this internally, a lot of it relies on technology education too, for this age group to know what's possible. Because we know that boomers are quite technology advanced, like 55 to 75. I mean, we have it with our clients. And then the 80 to 90 or 100 plus, some of them, the ones who are exposed to grandchildren or children, are aware. But then some might need more education, tech education of what's possible, what's not possible. So I feel I second what you say. And it also talks about this whole concept of, which we talk at Seniors Junction, digital transformation of senior housing. Because in the beginning, senior housing was a place to be, let's say, connectedly living, but with the pandemic, all the resources of the staffing was moved to safety, which is for COVID. And now there's a need, like there was a gap to be connected again. And that's where Seniors Junction is positioning itself to have that serious leisure component. And we're quite aware the environment makes a difference, because at some level, yes, we can offer people leisure, but there's also, there's a threshold, like you said, right? Someone who's agitated. So in our understanding, if one is at a threshold, if they're above a threshold, you can do educational interventions like we are doing. But if someone's below a threshold, it not just needs education, but it also needs immersive experiences, like with VR, or in the future when we'll have digital twins, you know, we'll have more personalization, more customizations that's possible. And also, as you see across the age group that you move, the cognitive ability goes, but the affect stays, right? You don't stop feeling. Nostalgia stays, feelings stay. And that's where you've really tapped in that concept of belonging and nostalgia really well, because that is quite central to what we do. You're smiling. Am I telling the things which you believe in, Munira?
Absolutely, absolutely. And it reminded me of one of my experience. One of my participants had trouble to recognize her own daughter, but she recognized the music, the tune she knew when she was growing up. Whenever we turned on the radio with that same tune, she would stand up from her chair and start moving like she wanted to dance. So that's amazing, like how little bit of memory stays and what type of memory may retain longer. Like that's a whole area of research.
There is. And that's where I'm so fortunate to have a musicologist as my co-founder, because I have zero knowledge of music. And this guy can, you know, I've learned so much in the past few weeks or months actually working about how people respond. Because there's another thing which you will realize, and since you come from South Asian background like me, we have a lot of religion, spirituality, which is the quotes, the faith belief system, which a lot of older adults hold. Now, when you come in the Western context, where not many believe in church or spirituality, in quotes, but that's music, right? The music they remember, the choir songs that they sang, or when they grew up, they went to a certain kind of church with their parents, but they remember the tunes, and different churches has different music. And I'm learning that through Paul's stuff. And as we also offer services, so one is the abled or independently living, and one is the, you know, slightly dependent, not full ability, like maybe certain compromises, but at the same time, their intervention then becomes more audio enabled, more playlists, more audiobooks, more courses on through, you know, which you can deliver through listening. Because even when my father was at the end of his life, what we put was a lot of religious music, which he used to listen, and that was his comfort thing. We could video call him only like two times, like 10 minutes in the morning and 10 minutes in the evening. And that's all we were allowed, because they were giving care to so many people. But it's one of those things to innovate, right? To make people experience that something within your heart. And unfortunately, medicine or public health doesn't teach you that. You have to then work with different domains like liberal arts to really understand what a human being is. And the podcast before you is about a human being is nothing but their stories, right? Their stories, and then you add their songs and their culture and their food. That's what a human being is. Right, Paul? You're on mute.
Absolutely.
So, okay. So my question is, Munira, that if this is the vision that you bring of helping people's environment, what do you think are the challenges and opportunities in implementing customizations or the vision that you have?
Well, the first challenge technology-based intervention faces is cost. But if you consider long-term cost of mental health care due to social isolation, I think this is nothing. You can keep our senior citizens mentally healthy and productive in their own homes with technology. And more technology-based intervention means less physical contact, which is a big concern during this pandemic. And we are enjoying our days because our seniors worked hard in their prime years to get us here. So it is our duty to provide the best possible solution. to keep their minds sharp as before. So I would say that there are more opportunities than challenges. I sound like
we'll get you an election ticket and you know we'll vote for you.
Too optimistic. Maybe I'm biased for that.
That's good. Well, it's true. And also we imagine that as we move forward, the cost of the technology gets reduced. As it becomes more scaled up, we think, well, there'll be less and less cost per unit. So, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As the commodification of technology happens, which is also happening to a great extent, it becomes like default, like nobody will think twice. So by the time Paul, you and I end up, I think we're going to be fine.
I think we should be set. That's my goal, is to have everything ready for myself. That's right. So I'm well taken care of. That's a good goal, isn't it? What advice would you have for our company?
Well, first of all, I would like to say that this is a wonderful initiative. And I feel privileged to be able to talk to you about this. And like the saying goes that everyone is different and one size doesn't fit all.
Yes.
Therefore, I would suggest more person-centered approach on tackling the issue, what you are doing. And what I'm trying to say is that we have to find a way for a customized solution. And I'm glad that I met you, that you are working on that.
Thank you. We're trying. So some parts are easier than the others. Some are not, because even the tech has to go at that. Like sometimes it's the gap is in the tech R&D, because the way old systems were made, even in AI or whatever classifiers are made, and the multi-stakeholder approach that you have when you have a senior, because it's not just the senior making that decision. It's the family member, it's the caregiver, it's the senior housing. It is what content we have. So it's so many layers of filtration before the recommendation can come through. I mean, we personally are far away. Is it in our thoughts? Yes, for sure. It's nice to think about it. But the first baby steps, right? We want to get enough content providers onboarding, and then training them how to teach people who are 80 plus, who are 90 plus, because it's a different way of talking, and it's a different level of patience you need, different level of engagement strategies you need. So, you know, we're doing so many levels of innovation, pedagogical, content delivery. So what happens is when there's too much innovation happening at every level, you need some stabilization to come through. And then once that comes, then we add more innovation, you know, so that's where we are. And Munira, you've shared a beautiful video with us, which I will share with our listeners in the link below. But if people want to find you, connect with you, talk to you, maybe commercialize your research, how can they find you?
I am working at Gaten Brain Lab. So if someone Googles me in Gaten Brain Lab Parkwood, they can see me there. And in LinkedIn or in ResearchGate, I can be found as Munira Sultana. And my areas of expertise are aging, cognitive health, and technology and innovation.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And we should say Dr. Munira, because she has two doctorates.
Two doctors. I've been telling this to Namrata. She's doctor. I'm just a single doctor. Thank you very much for speaking with us. It's been very enlightening, very inspiring.
Thank you.
And I enjoyed thoroughly. Thank you so much.
Our pleasure. Thank you.